Okay, so what's all the background noise? And welcome to the DD&D podcast.
GMO, GMO, GMO is the way to go.
I thought it was GMO must go.
GMO, GMO, GMO is the way to go.
All right. I see you love your fellow man.
You what?
I see you love your fellow man. You want to poison them?
Yeah. We're GMO. We might as well eat GMO.
Right.
Welcome to the DD&D podcast, Demented Dungeons and Dragons.com, where we talk about everything, including Dungeons and Dragons.
Yeah.
How'd that sound?
Well, it actually sounds pretty bad. You sound kind of faint and in the background and... Uh-oh, I think I left my tool in your truck.
You did.
It's okay, I guess. I don't know.
Is that better? Can you hear me better?
Yeah. Your voice sounds a little distant, but it's clear enough.
The heck? Oh, it's my tablet. That's why. Okay.
Your tablet?
Yeah, the reason why I sound distant is because I am distant. I was in the cab, in the sleeper part of my truck.
Oh, and you're talking a long way away from the microphone.
Yeah, I'm on the Bluetooth. I'm on the big truck Bluetooth.
Oh. The thing that never really worked before when you were driving.
Yeah, it works and it don't really work. I mean, you know. But it's a hands-free device.
Hands-free device.
Yeah. So, hello and welcome to the DD&D podcast, Demented Dungeons and Dragons.com, where we talk about everything but Dungeons and Dragons.
I thought DD&D stand for Dorks, Dummies, and Deviants.
The Dumb and Dumber podcast.
Oh. So, GMO, GMO.
GMO is the way to go.
Yeah. So, what are we going to discuss about GMO today?
Just say no to GMO. Just say no to GMO. Well, basically our podcast today is a do-over for our jacked up podcast last week.
Okay. You mean I shouldn't hit the mute button?
Correctamundo.
At least I shouldn't do Star 6, since officially I'm the only person calling in.
Correctamundo.
Oops.
So, basically, right now I'm working on finishing up filing my tax papers for the criminal element of government.
Right.
And then...
So the CET instead of the CES.
Correct.
Well, it'd still be the CES, the criminal element of society.
Maybe. getting my laptop out, though, so that I can...
Maybe about it. They're definitely the criminal element.
Criminals.
Huh.
There it is. So, a word from our sponsors.
Sponsors? We have sponsors?
Yeah, me.
You were supposed to tell them that.
I'm sorry, what?
We discussed this. You weren't supposed to tell them that you were the sponsor.
Oh, we weren't?
No. How are we supposed to put people into advertising with us if we know that we're, if they know that we're the only people sponsoring us?
Oh. Well, I wasn't aware that I was supposed to be aware of that.
Oh, well. Now the cat's out of the bag. Got all 17 of them.
Plus one.
Plus one. Yeah,
and
we might just tell people, go ahead and dump your cats off on our property.
I think somebody already did that.
Yeah.
Which is okay, really.
Have the plus one.
Right. The new guy.
The new guy.
So basically what we're going to do is we're going to create a Facebook page. So you can go like us on Facebook, and we can kind of keep track of how many likes we have, how many listeners we have, so that we can potentially get some sponsors if somebody wants to sponsor us. But in the meantime, I have three sponsors for my business that I already have, a different part of my business or whatever, if you will. And since I promote them all the time everywhere else, I figure I might as well promote them here as well.
Hey.
One of them has been on the podcast and is a like-minded individual. But I'll start with the Manor Motel, who has been one of my sponsors for the longest time. The Manor Motel is out of Joliet, Illinois, and he was sponsoring TruckerDate.com, but now, after he got too much grief from his customers over it, he is now sponsoring my astrology site, datingbythesigns.com, because he's from India, and he believes in Trucker Date. He thought it was a great idea, and he's been advertising for me for years.
Well,
but people ought
to back from people who didn't understand.
Right, you know, it's like the crap that you got from my advertisement on the truck. TruckerDate.com, what's next? Lot Lizards Are Us.
Yeah, I've heard that, but not as often as you'd think. So.
Right, but he got a lot of slack, you know, because a lot of people assume the truck drivers are whores, and a lot of us aren't. But anyway, so this guy, he believed in, you know, my website, and so he promoted me.
I'm probably the only sailor on board our ship that didn't go and get a hooker in a longapo.
Right. Military personnel is probably more slutty than truck drivers.
Actually, to be more accurate, I wasn't the only one, but the others who didn't were gay.
That They already had their partner.
So I was the only person who wasn't fucking somebody in the long up.
So yeah, if you're ever in Joliet, Illinois, make sure you stop by the Manor Motel and say hi at least, or get a room. He's a good guy.
Get a room.
Get a room. Yeah. Anyway, he's got a pretty cool hotel. He really does. My other sponsor is Lenny Ladner. Lenny Ladner was running for U.S. Senate. Now he's running for Congress. He's a freedom fighter. And he's been on here twice.
Yeah, when Trump's in office, he might actually get elected.
Yeah. Wow, my computer is really slow. So you can find Lenny Ladner at voteforlenny.com. Lenny for U.S. Senate.com or Lenny. No, wait, is it Lenny? No, Ladner. Ladner for U.S. Senate or LadnerForCongress.com. Or you can find him at scrap.gov/scrap.com.
Scrap it all!
Scrap. If it ain't working, scrap it. And most of it don't work, so we just need to scrap all of it.
Scrap it all!
Scrap it all! So, yeah, Lenny has been my, he hasn't been my sponsor since 2008. I met him in 2008. I, shortly after that, became his IT guy, helped him with his websites and promoting, stuff like that. And then a couple years ago, he put me on his trailer. He's a truck driver also. He put me on his trailer. He's got his information on his trailer real big. More government equals less freedom. Less government equals more freedom. VoteForLenny.com. And then at the corner it says sponsored by TruckerDate.com. So he's promoting TruckerDate for me.
TruckerDate.
That's my main website. And then we have Trucker's Choice Weekly. It's a weekly magazine put out by Trucker's Choice. And they are at truckerschoice.com. You can find their magazine in a lot of truck stops or repair facilities across the United States. And if you want to advertise there, just go to truckerschoice.com and check out their advertising options. Really good people. I started out there as an advertiser, and it just kind of slowly formed into a mutual, not really a partnership, but a mutual sponsorship. They're sponsoring me. I'm sponsoring them. Everybody's happy. They really like me. I really like them. So they're sponsoring me. I'm sponsoring them. So truckerschoice.com. You can find them at Facebook under The Trucker's Choice. And you can find Lenny on Facebook as well under Vote for Lenny. And I don't think Manor Motel is on Facebook, but there you go. Those are my three main sponsors. Other than that, we don't have any sponsors for David, David, and David.
Yeah, who wants to sponsor Demented Dungeon or Dragon?
Right. Sh- show.
TSR Games wants to.
Pardon?
Maybe TSR Games wants to sponsor us.
All right, there you go.
Or sue us for copyright infringement.
So, on our website, daviddavidanddavid.com, which is for our off-grid organic farm and retreat, which we're still working on. It's still under construction. Someone asked how, I forgot the question. Let me turn my internet on.
How are we keeping the Department of the USDA from, how are we keeping under their radar?
Yeah, basically. How do we stay under the radar, or how do we,
Because we really aren't trolling.
True that. How do we stay out of the clutches of the USDA? Not the USDA. Is it USDA?
Department of Agriculture is what you told me before, so I assume DA.
Yeah, USDA. I'm looking. Okay, I'm loading the website now.
And my first question when you asked me that is, what do they do? Why would they even be interested in us?
Right. Yeah. Still loading. My slow internet. Just say no to GMO.
GMO, the way to go!
Damn, page cannot be found.
Oh, no.
Yeah, my internet sucks. Crap, it won't work.
But we got that giant tower right across the street from us.
Right, I think that's the government tower. So anyways, yeah. All right, so how are we affected by the USDA? And really, I don't think we are. From what I've read in all my studies on the USDA, it's Department of Agriculture. They're actually supposed to protect people like us. That's not what they were designed to do. That's what we were told they were designed to do. They were designed to increase the size, the cost, extended reach, and the power of government. But what's supposed to do is they're supposed to protect farmers and protect agriculture. They're supposed to look out for the well-being of their fellow American, if you will. They're supposed to be looking out for their homeland. They're supposed to be looking out for their people, but they're not. They're looking out for big business, and they're turning a blind eye to a lot of the crap that's going on in the industry that's not supposed to be going on in the industry.
What's the big government agency that thought it was a brilliant idea to bring in kudzu to feed cattle?
Probably Department of Agriculture. That or is EPA maybe.
No, I have a feeling it was the Department of Agriculture.
It probably was Department of Agriculture.
So maybe we should do a Google search on that, see. Who brought in the kudzu?
Yeah, and I ain't got no
how well they're protecting us.
Right. I can't tell you because my internet sucks. So, let's see here. All right, I'm going to play this one first because this one actually talks about the USDA, and it basically shows where the USDA is supposed to be helping organic farmers and helping regular farmers, and they're not. They're actually turning their backs on us.
Well, yeah, USDA organic is often not organic. They are too many exceptions.
Right. The USDA is supposed to make sure that they're organic when they don't. They really, they're just collecting money and not doing their job. They're taking the money and not doing the job.
Oh, you mean that's like some of these kosher, I don't know what you call them, priests?
Yeah.
That they don't even taste the product. They don't inspect it or nothing. It's like, hey, yeah. You got a blessing. Your pork is kosher.
Exactly.
And so somebody's able to sell some kosher pork.
Has that actually really happened?
Yeah, actually, that's probably where you ran across that kosher pork commercial.
I didn't run across the kosher pork commercial.
Oh, somebody did.
No, Jimmy and I were joking around about it, though.
Okay. But
I'm always,
like that does occasionally happen.
Yeah, I'm always giving you crap about that. Kosher, pepperoni, so on and so forth.
Anyway, yeah, so some department brought in kudzu supposedly for our benefit. USDA certifies organic things. Supposedly it cannot be organic. Well, it cannot be organic if it ever had a GMO in it. All right? Two major products out there are being sold on a regular basis that were both definitely genetically modified. One of them is a bacteria that was genetically modified to produce more thickener, and the other was canola. There is no such thing as a non-GMO canola. Canola is genetically modified rapeseed oil. You cannot have non-GMO GMOs.
Right? It's all natural and organic GMO.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. We can't have natural and organic GMOs.
Well, apparently canola is a natural GMO.
Well, you and I are a natural GMO.
Yeah, well, it depends on whose belief and theory you have on human origins, but yeah.
Right. So there you go. We are all natural GMOs.
Yay.
So David Ray and I are organic GMO farmers.
Yeah, no, we're not GMO farmers.
No, we are GMO, and we are farmers.
Yeah.
But our food is organic. Our food is organic as possible.
Yeah, maybe kind of, sort of.
Yeah, I said as possible. It's kind of hard to be organic when you have GMO next door.
Yep. Well, actually, as long as we don't grow soybean, when he's growing soybean, we should be okay. And we have the ability to control the runoff. We just have to be selective of where we tap for water on the lower part of our land. So, because with the horses, he doesn't spray anything on his field. And the other neighbor on the other side of him, as far as I know, he doesn't spray anything on his field. So.
Right. Yeah. And the neighbor behind us won't be either.
No, he won't be. But, yeah. Unfortunately, all of his water is, and most of his, well, half of his land has offflow from the same GMO neighbor.
Right.
Maybe only a third. Because everything from his south side to the stream.
Right. That would be half.
Well, I don't know. Yeah, maybe half.
Nah, maybe a third.
We'll have to... Anyway, we'll still have to test our water and see if it's been affected or not.
Right.
You know, maybe the GMO guy was sold right by Monsanto and it doesn't dissolve in water. I find that really hard to believe. It's like, well, is there a water in it when you spray it? That might give him pause. Like, well, yeah. Okay, so it's dissolved in water then. What makes you think it won't dissolve in water later? What Monsanto told me. Well, you know, hey, they want you to buy their product. Have you ever heard of a used car salesman?
Yeah. Well, yeah, I'm a truck driver. And I've learned real quick not to believe recruiters because they will lie just to get you in the door.
You mean that recruiter that talked to you was just trying to get you to turn around and go back in?
Probably. Because, yeah, he's like, well, I'm here to make changes, blah, blah, blah. But actually, he was more honest. He said, I actually can't make the changes. I can only take your guys' input to the next level. You know, take it to the higher-ups and say, look, this is what all the drivers are saying, and this is what the majority of the drivers are saying. You know, these are all the common issues that all the drivers, or most all the drivers, are complaining about. So we need to address them.
Yipper, yipper.
So here is the first audio for the day. They're not in the same sequence as before, but that's okay.
Oh.
We'll go ahead and play them again, and we'll do all of our commentary, even though it won't be the same commentary as last time. But this one here talks about USDA, where the other two don't really.
Q&A. Threats to organic farming are soaring. Written by Tara Dodrill, Off-Grid Foods Zero. Print this article. Organic farmer speaks out. Image source, Cale University. The battle between biotech giants like Monsanto and organic farmers, as well as consumers concerned about food safety, has been raging in America for several years. GMO labeling laws are currently being considered in a multitude of states, while at the same time lawsuits proposed by both growers and GMO producing companies are clogging up court dockets. Biotech companies have successfully sued farmers for patent infringement on their genetically modified seeds, even in cases where the farmer did not plant a single GMO seed. Farmers have also begun to turn the tables and are suing neighboring growers in the biotech industry for GMO cross-contamination, which destroyed organic crops. Off the Grid News recently sat down with agricultural expert and beekeeper Rick Austin to discuss the fate of the American farmer and the impact the genetic modification of the food supply is impacting both growers and consumers in general. Austin has written two best-selling books focused on sustainable and healthy growing habits, Secret Garden of Survival and Secret Greenhouse of Survival. Austin has also toured the country speaking about the threat genetically engineered crops pose to the bee population and how the loss of the honeybee would prove disastrous for both humans and animals. OTG, what types of threats to organic crops do GMO crops pose? Rick, for one thing, there is the problem of cross-pollination from GMO crops, both via the wind, as in corn pollination, and via pollinators like honeybees. Since a farm growing GMO crops could be situated right next to a farm trying to grow organic crops, what the organic farmer could end up with next year would be seeds that were no longer organic and are instead contaminated with GMO DNA. and his new seeds from that pollination could quite possibly be sterile, since many GMO crops are designed to be sterile so that the farmer cannot save seeds and replant next year. Thus the farmer using GMO crops becomes a slave to buying GMO seeds each year, while the innocent bystander organic farmer has lost years of genetically clean and organic work through the contamination of his crops by GMOs. Furthermore, Monsanto is actively suing innocent victims of its GMO pollen, when farmers through no fault of their own, have hybrid crops containing GMO DNA. Since Monsanto has a patent on its genetically engineered crops, small neighboring farmers are being sued by the chemical giant for patent infringement, which those small, innocent, and less than wealthy farmers do not have the resources to defend. New Survival Seed Bank lets you plant a full-acre crisis garden. Thus, Monsanto is putting small, non-compliant as in not buying Monsanto's GMO seeds, farmers out of business. The result is that the only farms left standing will have to buy Monsanto's GMO products. Truly, this is restraint of trade and extortion, disguised as patent violations. OTG, what are the challenges of being an organic farmer in such a chemical-saturated world? Rick, aside from being polluted and contaminated by GMO pollen, an organic farmer is also subject to the overuse of pesticide and herbicides that are used on neighboring GMO crops. Since GMO crops are now using more and more fertilizer, pesticide, and herbicides each year, just to maintain their unsustainable crops, these chemical contaminants often spill over into organic farms through airborne contamination, or through water and soil erosion onto the organic property. OTG, what is the solution to the GMO crop debate? Rick, the real solution is by requiring GMO labeling of any product that contains GMOs. This would be costly for the food manufacturers and packing companies. And if consumers were able to vote with their wallets, and as consumers become educated to the dangers of GMOs, they could choose not to buy GMO products, and could instead buy organic. The real challenge is in the incestuous relationship that Monsanto has with our government, where top Monsanto execs spend a stint in government agencies like the FDA, the USDA, and the EPA who invariably block consumer watchdog efforts to stop GMOs, and who then go back to even better paid jobs at Monsanto, a reward for hurting the U.S. consumer. Obama's current food czar, who runs the FDA, is the former VP of public policy at Monsanto. Talk about the fox in the hen house. Interestingly, many countries outside the U.S. are not in Monsanto's pockets, and they have instituted GMO labeling and have in many cases outright banned the use of GMOs in their countries. It is not that the U.S. government doesn't care about its consumers, it is that the U.S. government is too corrupted by Monsanto dollars and lobbyists. OTG, does a crop have to be 100% organic to be truly organic? Because of cross-contamination by GMO crops and the chemical herbicides used on them? Rick, to be honest, I have come to hate the word organic because it has become more of a marketing term and a ploy than a truth. The term organic has been bastardized and misused so often that it has become a deception to consumers. Truly organic crops and foods are supposed to be very restrictive, but it is difficult to police that, especially with government agencies that would rather look the other way than do what is best for the people that actually pay their salaries, the taxpayers. I have coined the term nature culture that represents what I am doing in gardening, that is not only organic but it is simply the way nature has been growing fruits, nuts, berries, and herbs for millions of years. My gardening concept uses symbiotic relationships found in nature so that I can produce bug-free food, without the use of pesticide, fertilizer, or herbicides. OTG, what are your thoughts on the GMO food labeling debate? Rick, we must expose Monsanto for what they are, and bring awareness to people so that they can vote to change the way our food industry is going. This is difficult in a world with momentary consumer attention spans, sensationalist reality programs, and a mainstream media that are complicit in the crimes being committed by our government and chemical companies against the voters of this country and humanity in general. And we must start growing our own foods at home, so that we have a healthy choice and are not slaves to the corporate farming and industrialized grocery distribution system. Only when we can vote by eating our own homegrown food will the megalithic AG companies no longer have control over our destiny and our health. OTG, what are the most common misconceptions about the need for commercial crop fertilizers? Rick, we have overfarmed lands using this megalithic corporate farming mentality, planting monocrops over huge parcels that have created topsoil and nutrient depletion in our ground, and therefore in our crops and in the food on our tables. The food in the grocery stores today, we have one-third the nutrients of the same food found in grocery stores in the 1960s. That means that we have to eat three times the amount of food that they did in the 60s just to get the same nutrients. Does anyone see the connection of why our society is so obese? We are starving for nutrients, and no matter how much we consume of commercially produced products, our bodies cannot get what we need. We therefore substitute even worse consumer food products that contain immense amounts of sugar using the number one food additive in food products, high fructose corn syrup, and are killing ourselves in the process. Oh yeah, did I mention that 98% of all corn grown in this country comes from GMO crops? Can you say poisoned high fructose corn syrup? There ought to be a skull and crossbones on every product with high fructose corn syrup in it, but of course, that would mean that most of the food on the grocery store shelves would have to carry that label. OTG, why are weeds good for the garden? Rick, people who have read my books, heard me speak, or seen articles written about my secret garden of survival, know that I say that weeds are good. That is because in nature weeds are pioneer plants. They are the first plants to occupy barren soil. Weeds will grow where nothing else will. They break up poor soil with their roots, and they make bad soil better through allowing air, water, and microorganisms into soil that would not support other life. In nature, weeds are the first plants in a whole line of succession. Weeds die back and provide nutrients for other plants to grow. Without weeds first creating inhabitable soil, we would not have had any other plants to follow, including the most mature of ecosystems like old oak forests. When chemical companies kill weeds for the expediency of creating commercial crops on a rapid timetable, they ultimately kill the very plants that could help them replenish the topsoil and the nutrients that are missing from our foods today. If we continue on this path, we will soon be eating flavored cardboard from our grocery store shelves. Don't forget to add the high fructose corn syrup.
Yay, flavored cardboard!
Yay!
With high fructose corn syrup. So yeah, weeds are the first responders.
Yeah, we call them weeds, and they're really nature's way of fixing the soil.
Right. Weeds are God's medicine. They don't only fix us, they fix our earth. They fix the damage that we create.
Right.
And we're supposed to be the higher intelligence.
I don't know. With something with a brain about a mile in diameter, even if it was only about a quarter inch thick, be much more intelligent than us.
Are you talking about mushrooms?
Yeah, they're mycelium. Communicate with the plants around them using the same chemicals that our brain synapses use. And literally ask trees, hey, what do you need? And the grasses and stuff, what do you need? And they go and they go and get those nutrients and deliver it in exchange for the starch. Because, you know, mushrooms don't produce their own starch. But, you know, these things can get a mile across, a single plant. know. And they're basically nothing more than a neural network.
So that one guy that said that believes that we evolved from mushrooms has it backwards. Mushrooms are higher evolved than we are.
Okay.
So they're the next step in evolution.
I don't know.
So when we reincarnate into mushrooms.
Yeah, I don't know about that. But, you know, it stands to reason they might be smarter than us. So, they don't do
yeah.
it all. But, you know, they might be smarter than us.
Yeah. So, what did he say? He was replacing organic with what?
I'm sorry, I don't understand.
He said he didn't like the term organic because it had
Yeah, I remember him saying that. I can't quite wrap my tongue around the concept he used. But
nature something.
Yeah, nature crafting.
I think that's what it was. Yeah, he says because the terminology organic has been abused and bastardized.
Oh, it has been.
Right.
Like,
because... Yeah, the New World Order is turning a blind eye to these big companies who...
Well, basically, if the inorganic poisons in your soil are over 5 years old, that's okay. All
right? Right.
Whereas, on the other hand, if you got a farmer who very carefully diverted all the poisons from the neighbor's land away from his, he still can't call himself organic because he's downstream of them. So he can't get a USDA organic approval, even though his food might actually be organic.
Right. Right. We'll never have, well, maybe not never, but we won't be able to get a USDA stamp of approval on our, well, maybe that's what they were talking about on the website with the USDA. USDA certified organic. So they weren't clear. They weren't clear on their message as to what they were talking about regarding the USDA. But maybe that's what they were talking about. How
well,
do we
call ourselves organic? The USDA may come around and say, "Hey, we don't approve of you as being organic." Like, that's fine. And you can state such. We're not asking your permission.
Yeah, we'll specifically say on our labels, non-USDA certified.
Yep.
We don't really recognize them as a qualified certification anyway.
No. Nope, and it costs a lot of money to get their certification. And what does it mean? It doesn't mean anything. It means you might be selling organic canola.
Organic GMO.
Yeah.
You know, that's just it. You know, we plan on doing our own testing, and we plan on putting the results on our website. So our customers can determine whether or not we're organic enough for them. We'll test the soil, we'll test the waters, and we'll put it on our website and say, you know, whatever, you know, we'll test whatever we can test, and we'll put it on our website. These are our test results for this time, for this whatever, soil, water, from this location, this food, whatever, blah, blah, blah. We'll specifically put that information on our website, and you, the customer, can determine whether or not we're organic enough for you.
GMO, GMO, GMO's the way to go.
Yeah, you're insane.
Of course I am. This is the demented Dungeons and Dragons. what else was he talking about?
Q&A. Threats to organic farming are soaring. Written by Tara Dodrill. Off-grid multitude of states, while at the same time lawsuits proposed by both growers and GMO producing companies are clogging up court dockets.
Oh yeah, the tables are turning.
Yeah.
Organic farmers are now starting to sue GMO farmers for cross-contamination.
Yeah.
So if Monsanto wants to come after us for our neighbor contaminating our crop, we can countersue our neighbor for contaminating our crop.
Yep. Monsanto sued us for having your stuff on our land, so we're suing you for putting it there.
Right. Yep, we don't want your garbage.
We didn't want your garbage.
Right.
So we're recovering the funds.
Monsanto
charged us so many millions of dollars, and so we're suing you for the millions of dollars.
Yep.
So Monsanto takes our farm, we're taking yours.
Yep. And if you want your money back, you can get it from Monsanto, because they're the ones who created the problem in the first place.
Yeah, maybe we can trade places, and you can have our farm since it's been taken from us.
There you go. Only problem is they'll get the better end of the deal.
Well, they might not want the wood.
Yeah, well, true. Well, there you go.
They might be inclined to trade with us.
That's what I was thinking.
Biotech companies have successfully sued farmers for patent infringement on their genetically modified seeds, even in cases where the farmer did not plant a single GMO seed. Farmers have also begun to...
That's why we don't plan on growing anything that our GMO neighbors are planting, because we don't want cross-contamination.
Right. And honestly, you should pay attention to what your neighbor's doing anyway. If your neighbor's growing corn, and you have seed for a special variety of corn, you don't want to take a chance on cross-pollination, so you shouldn't grow that in that location at that time. You know?
Yep.
And you talk with your neighbor and you coordinate. And maybe he does the early planting and you do the late planting. You know? And so, you know, you just try to work it out.
Right, because our neighbor did beans the last 2 years. So he may do corn this year, and if he does corn, we won't be able to grow any corn.
Right, we shouldn't try. And, you know, I think he did wheat. He did some sort of grain 2 years ago, and then he followed it up with beans, and so he got two crops that year, which is impressive, you know. And I'll say this, you know, he was very happy earlier last year, you know, like in the springtime. Oh, yeah, I only have to spray Roundup once a year. Well, right after he planted, the amaranth came up faster than the genetic modified soybeans. And that was right after he sprayed. It was like, oh, so he sprayed again.
Right, he's killing back a superfood so he can have his beans.
Well, that's true. Yeah, amaranth is a close relative to spinach and has more nutrients in it than spinach. So, like, if Popeye got strong eating spinach, imagine how much stronger you will be if you eat amaranth.
No way, that's a weed. We don't want no stinking weed.
Yeah, most farmers in the area call it pig weed. It was only suitable for pigs. Like, well, the Spanish conquistadors went through and killed any farmer that was growing amaranth down in South America, in Central America, because they wanted to take control of the area, and they couldn't do it as long as they could grow their own food. And basically, that's what Monsanto's doing to you now. Monsanto's doing its darndest to take care of, control your food, so that you're now dependent on Monsanto, and Monsanto can write the rules. You know? And you can thank your Uncle Sam for that.
Yay! Great and almighty Uncle Sam!
Yep, Sam's your uncle.
He's not my uncle. GMO! GMO! GMO's the way to go!
Yeah.
Tables and are suing neighboring growers in the biotech industry for GMO cross-contamination which destroyed organic crops. Off the Grid News recently sat down with agricultural expert and beekeeper Rick Austin to discuss the fate of the American farmer and the impact the genetic modification of the food supply is impacting both growers and consumers in general. Austin has written two best-selling books focused on sustainable and healthy growing habits, Secret Garden of Survival and Secret Greenhouse of Survival. Austin has also toured the country speaking about the threat genetically engineered crops pose to the bee population and how the loss of the honeybee would prove disastrous for both humans and animals.
So, how is GMO flowers harmful to honeybees? I didn't think they would. Well, I guess, yeah. It
depends on what they're genetically modified for. The genetically modified corn, they didn't think it would harm monarchs because, you know, monarchs don't eat. They don't suck nectar from corn flowers, you know, because, you know, they just don't, there's no nectar to be gotten from them. All right.
Right.
You know, you got the ear of corn with the tassels on it, and that's the female flower. And you've got, or the with the silk on it, and that's the female flower. And you've got the tassels up on top that release the pollen. There's no place to get any nectar from. So why would it affect monarch butterflies? But they found that in places where there's lots of Roundup Ready corn, it's not Roundup Ready. They made a genetically modified corn that actually produces its own insecticide. And they found that corn was somehow affecting the monarchs and killing them.
Nice.
You know, and you'd think, you know, monarchs don't go anywhere near corn. So why would that kill the monarchs? You know, and quite frankly, you know, I'm a little puzzled myself, but, you know, that's what the studies have shown. So, same thing with bees. You know, bees don't go anywhere near corn either. But for some reason, that stuff has harmed the bees.
Interesting.
You know, there's a danger to putting that genetic information into your food. Think about it. If you got a plant that produces its own insecticide, that means that when you eat it, it's going to have that insecticide in it. So you're dosing yourself with the insecticide from the very plant that you're supposed to be getting nutrients from.
Right, so instead of getting nutrients, you're getting poison.
And that's not every genetically modified food, but, you know, there were some that were genetically modified to produce their own insecticide. It's like, great. And we're going to eat that? You know?
Of course.
Yeah.
GMOs. Oh.
Well, I guess worse, they found out that if you eat the corn that's been genetically modified to produce insecticide, your intestine will take the genetic material from that corn and incorporate it into its code, and next thing you know, you've got an intestine that's producing insecticide. So now you don't even have to eat the poison corn before you get the poison from the corn.
Right.
Because your body will just keep on producing it.
So they're turning us into insecticide-producing machines.
Yeah, which you flush down the toilet and the fishies eat. And, you know. Anyway.
Well, not everybody. Because the fish don't eat the poo that most people eat, because most of it goes to... Oh, yeah, no, they dump the waste into the rivers. Never mind.
Ultimately, it goes down to the ocean. They process it first and all that stuff. That's true. And supposedly put out clean water out of the, you know, sewage treatment plants and stuff like that, but... You know, eventually it's got to run off and end up in the rivers and lakes anyway, so. Unless they can sell it to some dumb city folk and tell them it's organic fertilizer. Made
Yay!
From poo.
GMO. GMO! GMO's the way to go!
Yep.
OTG, what types of threats to organic crops do GMO crops pose? Rick, for one thing, there is the problem of cross-pollination from GMO crops, both via the wind, as in corn pollination, and via pollinators like honeybees. Since a farm growing GMO crops could be situated right next to a farm trying to grow organic crops, what the organic farmer could end up with next year would be seeds that were no longer organic and are instead contaminated with GMO DNA. And his new seeds from that pollination could quite possibly be sterile, since many GMO crops are designed to be sterile so that the farmer cannot save seeds and replant next year.
Okay, yeah, there's another problem. I mean, basically... The law of nature is to reproduce, and they're basically creating food that cannot reproduce so that you have to be dependent on them. You cannot be self-reliant. And not only that, but you have a barren field, even if the food, even if you reproduce food but you don't harvest all the food, all that goes to waste because nothing will come back the next year because you have no seeds that are viable. If you have seeds at all, because a lot of them are seedless.
And some of your foods are seedless. Most seedless foods, though, it's my understanding it's done by hybrid. They figured out which hybrids will produce a non-seed-bearing offspring. So, you know, just like breeding a horse with a donkey, you get a mule. Well, they figured out that if you crossbreed certain plants, then you get some mules. You know, they'll grow up and live and thrive and, you know, even produce food, but they just, you know... There's no seeds. So, and we ran into a problem last night, or tonight even. We talked to Bill. He can't find any grapes that have seeds. He cannot find any grapevines that produce seeds. He wants seeds in his grapes. Seeds are good for you.
Oh, yeah.
You're supposed to eat the seeds of the fruit that you eat.
Except apple.
Supposed to eat those too.
They
don't even buy themselves.
they say apple seeds are toxic, but I've never seen or heard of anybody die from eating an apple seed because they, even though apple seeds are toxic, their toxicity is so low, you would have to eat a buttload of apple seeds in order to actually get...
Actually, it takes about a handful of apple seeds to kill. All right? That I do know. All right? But
not, not you're not going to go around eating a handful of apple seeds.
But there's like 5 seeds per apple. All right? If you eat the whole apple, seeds and all, you'd have to eat an awful lot of apples before you got a handful of seeds. And you're going
to
die of bloat before you die from the seeds.
Right. So, like I said, you got to eat a buttload of apple seeds before they'll actually do any harm to you. So there you go. Now you know how to kill yourself. Save up all your apple seeds and eat them all at once.
There you go. Yep, about a handful, maybe half a cup, third of a cup.
But it might be quicker and easier just to eat some hemlock.
Yeah. Or go down to McDonald's and eat nothing but hamburgers.
That'll kill you, but that'll kill you slowly.
Mmm, but such a tasty, tasty death.
Right. Die. Die from mystery meat death.
Yep.
Yep. Yep. Yep. Yep. Yep. Yep. Yep. Yep. Yep. Yep. Yep. Yep. Yep. Yep. Yep. Yep. Yep. Yep. Yep. Yep. Yep. Yep. Yep. Yep. Yep. Yep. Yep. Yep. Yep. Yep. Yep. Yep. Yep. Yep. Yep. Yep. Yep. Yep. Yep. Yep. Yep. Yep. Yep. Yep. Yep. Yep. Yep. Yep. Yep. Yep. Yep. Yep. Yep. Yep. Yep. Yep. Yep. Yep. Yep. Yep. Yep. Yep. Yep.
Yep. Yep. Yep. Yep. Yep. Yep. Yep. Yep. Yep. Yep.
Yep. Yep. Yep. Yep. Yep. Yep. Yep. Yep. Yep. Yep. Yep. Yep. Yep. Yep. Yep. Yep. Yep. Yep. While the innocent bystander organic farmer has now has lost years of genetically clean and organic work through the contamination of his crops by GMOs. Furthermore, Monsanto is actively suing innocent victims of its GMO pollen, when farmers through no fault of their own, have hybrid crops containing GMO DNA. Since Monsanto has a patent on its genetically engineered crops, small neighboring farmers are being sued by the chemical giant for patent infringement, which those small, innocent, and less than wealthy farmers do not have the resources to defend. New Survival Seed Bank lets you plant a full-acre crisis garden. Thus, Monsanto is putting small, non-compliant as in not buying Monsanto's GMO seeds, farmers out of business. The result is that the only farms left standing will have to buy Monsanto's GMO products. Truly, this is restraint of trade and extortion, disguised as patent violations. Oh.
That being said, another video that I watched, which we'll be playing that audio here shortly, they said that the rising cost of all of this stuff to support GMO farming is going through the roof, and if it keeps rising at the rate that it's rising, they're not even going to be able to afford to stay in business.
Yep.
So people like us are the lifeline of farming.
Well, it falls on the shoulders of the farmer. And so some new farmer comes in and their local county extension is going to advise them, well, yeah, go buy these soybeans and these pesticides and these insecticides, and that's the only way to go. And they're going to go out and do it. And they just find their farm through the bank. And so 5 years later, when they can't make the mortgage payment, the bank repossesses the farm and sells it to some other poor sucker who doesn't know any better.
Right, but even that can only go on so long.
I don't know. There's a sucker born every day.
You're looking at him.
Am I? I can't see you.
I meant yourself.
No, I don't have a mirror here. I've got no mirror.
Not you. Our listeners. Just kidding.
What? Well, we got listeners?
Probably not.
Oh, well.
They got suckers if they're listening to us. Suckers! Just kidding. Okay.
Teachy, what are the challenges of being an organic farmer in such a chemical-saturated world? Rick, aside from being polluted and contaminated by GMO pollen, an organic farmer is also subject to the overuse of pesticide and herbicides that are used on neighboring GMO crops.
Poison!
Since GMO crops are now using more and more fertilizer, pesticide, and herbicides each year, just to maintain their unsustainable crops, these chemical contaminants often spill over into organic farms through airborne contamination, or through water and soil erosion onto the organic property. OTG.
Right. The good thing is we have Roundup Ready onions that are growing next door that are fighting the chemicals.
Yeah, but every time we spray it, they get all twisted.
Right, but, yeah, so the thing of it is they just have to keep spraying and keep spraying and keep spraying and keep spraying. Like you were saying earlier, the guy next door, he was bragging about how he only had to spray once a year. This year he had to spray twice. Next year he may have to spray twice. Next year after that, he may have to spray twice. Year after that, he may have to spray three times.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if he didn't have to spray three times next year.
Yeah. It's not going to stay cost-effective.
And that's the amaranth kind of grew up a nice little rose. So.
Yeah.
It was almost like he planted them.
Now, the amaranth came up after he planted the soybeans, correct?
Yeah, it grew about four times as quick as the soybeans, but it came up after he planted them. He sprayed and then planted the soybeans, and up came the amaranth.
Right, because the amaranth is the first responders. It's trying to repair the soil.
Yep.
So that's the secret. You need more weeds to repair the soil from all the garbage that Roundup and all the other people around you are putting it, you know, put it, all the chemicals that people in the, around you are putting into the environment. Weeds are the first responders.
What is the solution to the GMO crop debate?
Weeds! Grow more weeds!
Rick, the real solution is by requiring GMO labeling of any product that contains GMOs. This would be costly for the food manufacturers and packing companies. And if consumers were able to vote with their wallets, and as consumers become educated to the dangers of GMOs, they could choose not to buy GMO products, and could instead buy organic. The real challenge is in the incestuous relationship that Monsanto has with our government, where top Monsanto execs spend a stint in government agencies like the FDA, the USDA, and the EPA, who invariably block consumer watchdog efforts to stop GMOs, and who then go back to even better paid jobs at Monsanto, a reward for hurting the U.S. consumer. Obama's current food czar, who runs the FDA, is the former VP of public policy at Monsanto. Talk about the fox in the hen house. Interestingly, many countries outside the U.S. are not in Monsanto's pockets, and they have instituted GMO labeling and have in many cases outright banned the use of GMOs in their countries. It is not that the U.S. government doesn't care about its consumers, it is that the U.S. government is too corrupted by Monsanto dollars and lobbyists.
So they don't care about their people, they care about money. That's all they care about.
What's the difference? I mean, either they care about their people or they don't care about their people. They care more about them than they don't care about their people.
Right. They're allowing these companies to poison us, but these guys are trying to be PC. Well, it's not that they don't care about us, it's that they don't care about it.
Yeah.
That's basically what it boils down to. GMO, GMO, GMO is the way to go.
Right.
What is this? Oh, okay, this is the New World Order Certificate of Title for our trailer. That we were forced to get, otherwise they would do harm to us.
Yeah.
OTG.
Oh, wait a minute. Not that our government doesn't care about us. It's just that they will do harm to us if we don't follow their rules, regulations, standards, and guidelines.
But they do care about us.
Yeah, they care about
who they can extract from us.
Right.
And when they can no longer extract money from us, then they call the herd.
They call the herd?
Yeah, they call the herd. They go through and thin out all the animals that are non-productive, but they can only have productive animals left, namely
right.
Your typical taxpayer.
Right. Freedom fighters are non-productible herd.
There you go.
Does a crop have to be 100% organic to be truly organic? Because of cross-contamination by GMO crops and the chemical herbicides used on them? Rick, to be honest, I have come to hate the word organic because it has become more of a marketing term and a ploy than a truth. The term organic has been bastardized and misused so often that it has become a deception to consumers. Truly organic crops and foods are supposed to be very restrictive, but it is difficult to police that, especially with government agencies that would rather look the other way than do what is best for the people that actually pay their salaries, the taxpayers.
Oh! It's not that they don't care about us, but they're turning the other cheek. I mean, they're turning their heads. Or we're paying their bills, but they're turning their heads for somebody else who's paying their bills also. But they're like saying, hey, I'll give you this extra money if you just look over there while I do this.
Right. It's not that they don't care about us, but they don't care about us.
Exactly.
I have coined the term nature culture that represents what I am doing in gardening.
Nature culture.
Nature culture.
Would that be like permaculture?
Basically, but he wanted to coin his own terminology so that he would get credit for it.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, basically he's doing a permaculture, nature culture, wildcrafting. That's what Marcus Rothkranz calls it, wildcraft, where things grow naturally in the wild.
Well, wildcrafting is part of permaculture.
Exactly.
You know, it's a term that's been around for a long time.
Right, so that's basically what we're doing, is nature culture, permaculture, wildcraft. You know, we're basically doing all that stuff, but we're not trying to coin any phrases. Oh, wait, we are coining a phrase, the Othertarian Church.
Othertarians, yeah, we coin phrases all the time.
Yeah.
Don't lie.
Liar!
Liar.
I'm a liar. Liar, liar, pants on fire.
Yeah, they were. Where's whatever, never mind.
That is not only organic, but it is simply the way nature has been growing fruits, nuts, berries, and herbs for millions of years. My gardening concept uses symbiotic relationships found in nature so that I can produce bug-free food without the use of pesticide, fertilizer, or herbicides.
Yeah, grow peppermint, lavender, lemon balm.
Yeah.
Catnip. marigolds, and marigolds will reproduce. They're not a perennial. They're an annual or whatever, the other way around. But you got to plant a lot of them. They will reproduce if you have enough of them, and they will spread like crazy if you have enough of them. But you got to start out with a handful of them instead of just a little bit. If you only have a little bit, they won't really spread. They won't really reproduce as much. If they reproduce at all.
You need them to take over.
Right. You want a big old patch of them. Plant a buttload of them. And then they will start reproducing and spread. Let's see what else. Mint is a big one, though. Lemongrass. Lemongrass is another good one. Yeah, there's a lot of plants out there that repel bugs that you don't want. Catnip is a great one to repel termites. So you want to plant those around your house or anywhere you don't want mice to eat up your stuff. Ticks, vampire bugs, basically plant lemon balm, lemongrass, and peppermint. I forgot what lavender keeps away, but lavender keeps away certain bugs as well. And thyme. Thyme also keeps away, I think, chiggers. And I forgot what kind of bugs marigolds. Yeah. They keep away tiggers. Right. Actually, tiggers love catnip. But chiggers do not like thyme. Or is it? I think it's thyme.
Thyme.
Yeah. Anyways.
It's a Mary and thyme.
So there's all kinds of plants you can plant to keep down the bug population. And then you can always have chickens and guineas that will help also.
OTG, what are your thoughts on the GMO food labeling debate? Rick, we must expose Monsanto for what they are and bring awareness to people so that they can vote to change the way our food industry is going. This is difficult in a world with momentary consumer attention spans, sensationalist reality programs, and a mainstream media that are complicit in the crimes being committed by our government and chemical companies against the voters of this country and humanity in general.
Wait a minute. Our government doesn't commit crime.
No, they write the laws. How can they be breaking them?
like Ron Paul said, don't steal. The government hates competition.
Yeah.
And we must start growing our own foods at home so that we have a healthy choice and are not slaves to the corporate farming and industrialized grocery distribution system.
Yeah, he's also said, you know, expose Monsanto for who they are. You know, we need to spread the message, you and me. Everybody needs to talk about, you know, these things. You know, it's like somebody said one time, this isn't the right terminology, but it's what they said. They said, the government wouldn't have to police us if we would police ourselves. Well, the government, that's partly true, but, you know, the government wouldn't have the excuse to police us if we would police ourselves. But at the same time, the government makes it illegal for us to police ourselves so that they have the excuse to police us.
That's not quite true. The Amish do a rather good job of policing themselves, and the government more or less doesn't police them.
They still police them, though. Okay. They may not police them in one area, but they still police them.
Somewhat.
But, yeah, you know, I mean, it's like, okay, you got drugs in your neighborhood. Do something about it. That way you don't have to worry about the cops coming in and doing something about it.
Do something.
Right. But then again, there's certain things that used to be our responsibility that we're not allowed to do anymore because the government has made it illegal for us to be responsible for our communities.
Well, yeah, it's because you're a ward of the state and you don't know what you're doing.
Right. You're not supposed to take the law into your own hands. Wait a minute. I thought I was the law.
You are the law.
But I'm not allowed to take the law into my own hands.
Yeah, it's your right and duty to take the law into your own hands.
Exactly. And that's where they've made it illegal for us to police ourselves.
Like, if I'm not allowed to take the law into my own hands, how did you even get into your position? Oh, I voted for you, and that's what, you know, a legal process? Like, how did you even know I voted for you? We vote by secret ballot in this country. Nobody knows who voted for who. So nobody knows who you're looking for. And if I didn't vote for you, I'm certainly not responsible for you.
They're working for the new world order.
Yeah, ultimately.
Only when we can vote by eating our own homegrown food will the megalithic AG companies no longer have control over our destiny and our health. OTG, what are the most common misconceptions about the need for commercial crop fertilizers? Rick, we have overfarmed lands using this megalithic corporate farming mentality, planting monocrops over huge parcels that have created topsoil and nutrient depletion in our ground, and therefore in our crops and in the food on our tables. The food in the grocery stores today, we have one-third the nutrients of the same food found in grocery stores in the 1960s.
Right. So.
Now, that particular complaint is a function of, we're not farming, we're mining. We're mining the soil instead of farming it. There's three major nutrients that people add to their soil in order to make their gardens and their lawns nice and green. All right. But plants, just like we, need like 92 some odd nutrients. All right. So those three nutrients encourage sugar growth, and fiber growth, but they don't encourage all the other functions of the plant. All right, so you get grass that looks nice and green and lush, but really it's kind of sick. All right, because it's only getting three of the nutrients it needs. And then farmers, they go a step further. They put six nutrients. All right, because you know it just doesn't do to grow a crop and not get any seed from it at all. Because most of the crops are seeds, you know. Corn is seeds, wheat is seeds, soybeans are seeds. And if you don't give the plant enough nutrients to produce the seeds, you know, they may not be healthy seeds, but at least they're seeds, you know. You know, the method of farming literally mines the soil and takes all the nutrients that the plant needs out, and next thing you know, you got to add these nutrients. And so they go the cheapest route they can. They add the major six and you know, hope the rest is somewhere in the soil, but more than likely it's not.
I know, because they kill the weeds, and the weeds are the ones who replenish the soil.
Yep. Yep.
Now you got to eat 2, 3, 4, 5 times the amount of food to get the same nutrients out of it. And now
I wonder why they're fat.
Right.
That means that we have 3 times the amount of food that they did in the 60s just to get the same nutrients. Does anyone see the connection of why our society is so obese?
There it is.
We are starving. And no matter how much we consume of commercially produced products, our bodies cannot get what we need. We therefore substitute.
That's not the only thing. You know, we have a friend who was not even 100 pounds soaking wet. She got on a pharmaceutical not too long ago that the doctors put her on, and now she probably weighs more than I do.
Yeah.
And because the pharmaceutical has changed her body. Yeah. So now she can't lose weight, where before she couldn't gain weight.
Right. So maybe she should cut her pills in half and go for the middle ground.
Right. And basically what the pill has done is just given her a frontal lobotomy. It hasn't really helped her. It just made her more, I don't know what you would call it, zombie-like.
She's more normal.
I guess you can call it that.
Yeah, but normal is phlebotomized, so, you know.
Right.
To even worse, consumer food products that contain immense amounts of sugar using the number one food additive in food products, high fructose corn syrup, and are killing ourselves in the process.
Yummy.
Oh yeah, did you mention that 98% of all corn grown in this country comes from GMO crops? Can you say poisoned high fructose corn syrup?
Yeah, most of our corn is GMO, but most of our corn that we grow here in the U.S., we don't eat. A lot of it is going into livestock, which is bad because we eat the livestock. But a majority of it is actually going into fuel. Now, I don't know if I have a problem with GMO fuel.
I have a problem with the corn going into fuel. Because it drives up your food prices. It's made it impossible for some Mexicans to even buy corn to feed their family.
Oh, I know. And in Venezuela, it's cheaper to buy a smartphone than it is to buy a sandwich.
Great.
I don't really know about that. But, I mean, I do know that food is expensive in Venezuela. And they basically have stated, I got this from a Venezuelan himself. He said that it's cheaper to buy a smartphone than it is to buy food.
Well, there you go. Next time I want a phone, I should send a sandwich down to Venezuela.
Hey, that's not a bad idea.
There ought to be a skull and bones on every product with high fructose corn syrup in it, but of course, that would mean that most of the food on the grocery store shelves would have to carry that label. Oh
no!
Chi-Chi, why are weeds good for the garden? Rick, people who have read my books, heard me speak, or seen articles written about my secret garden of survival, know that I say that weeds are good. That is because in nature weeds are pioneer plants. They are the first plants to occupy barren soil. Weeds will grow where nothing else will.
Not only that, but their roots go for miles. You know, not all of them, but a lot of them, their roots grow deeper than our food's roots grow. And so they bring nutrients up from the core of the earth and feed our food, which feeds us. So, hay. What is hay? It's just weeds, right? So, someone's farming their field for hay.
They usually do something like fescue or alfalfa, but it's usually full of weeds.
Okay.
The weeds, as long as there's not certain weeds in there. I mean, you know, yellow clover is not good to have in your field because while it's nutritious for your animals to eat it when it's fresh, it rots quickly and grows a fungus that's poisonous to cattle if you bale it.
Okay.
So there are some plants they don't want, but for the most part, if it's nutritious, bale it up.
So for a hay farmer, what ones grow the deepest roots so that they could sustain their crop for a longer period of time? Because I understand if you don't feed your hay field, becomes a straw field after a while.
Well, they'll love this one. Thistle.
Thistle has deep roots, like, you know, same as dandelion. But, so, you know, thistles are basically the dandelions of the farm field.
Right, but they don't want thistles in their...
It's a weed.
So in order to have healthy hay, you need thistles in your hay.
Well, maybe. And it's the deep root. Okay, there might be some others that will be acceptable. But, you know, it's a deep root. It's not like you can get dandelions to grow out in an open field because the open field just gets too long.
Right. It'll choke out dandelions.
Well, okay, so we do some research and find other deep-rooted plants. And those are the ones that bring nutrients up.
Right. So why do farmers not want thistle in their hay?
Well, because thistle is prickly and it has fluffy seeds that spread everywhere. And other than that, I don't know. It's nutritious.
The cows won't eat them, right?
I don't know. I don't know if they'll eat them dry or not.
Oh, dry they might.
Yeah. You know, goats wait until the end of the year and they'll eat up all your thistles. You know, but, you know, that's after they've already flowered and died back and everything. So, you know, most people find that a moot point. It's like, well, they're already dead. Who cares if the goat eats them? And it's like, but goats will eat them.
Right. So they've already served their purpose. They died back. Now they're goat food. But they've provided all this nutrients for your land. And they've gone to seed. And now the goat eats them after they die. So the goats eat them. They poop out fertilizer while the roots are still there going down into the earth, bringing up nutrients for the next year.
Yeah. Yep. That's basically the, that's the correct assessment.
So
no farmer wants them because, you know, they end up in the bales.
Right. So we should put on Tradio that we want hay that has thistles in it.
Yep. Maybe. I don't know. We'll have to research and see what their real complaints are. And, you know, verify, you know, is it true your cattle won't eat bales that have thistles in them? And they might say, oh, no, they eat them. Well, then what's the problem?
Right.
You know? Then
we should bail PNS and bring the hay over here.
Yeah, well, yeah. Why not? And if Jeff complains, like, you know, what's your complaint? The only problem is, though, I don't know that it's true, but the local established thuggery apparently has stated that it's illegal to grow thistles in your field, and so they'll come out and find you if you have too many.
The only problem is what?
The local thugs who call themselves government, I've heard say that it's illegal to have thistles in your field.
Right, because thistles are good for you.
Right, but they'll fine you for having too many of them.
Right, because they don't want, they want you to use Roundup. I mean, yeah, Roundup fertilizer.
Well, that's basically what they'll do to you if there's too many thistles in your field. They'll come out and spray them all.
Right. And then charge you for it.
Yep.
Communists!
Yep.
Yeah, and I'm sure they know that thistles are actually good for the field, but they don't want us to know that.
They break up poor soil with their roots and they make bad soil better through allowing air, water, and microorganisms into soil that would not support other life.
Right, because a lot of farmers are putting, what, lime on their fields and creating
Hard pan. About 18 inches down, the all the lime will settle in, and it cuts off all deep water from coming up, and, you know, makes it impossible for your plant roots to go any deeper, and so you can't have strong plants.
That's another reason why you need weeds to break up that.
If you put too much lime on your field and you end up creating a hard pan, and basically what you've done is you've made a giant cement pool out of your field, and no water comes up to the depths and no root can go down into it. So you've turned your field into a desert.
Yep.
In nature, weeds are the first plants in a whole line of succession. Weeds die back and provide nutrients for other plants to grow. Without weeds first creating inhabitable soil, we would not have had any other plants to follow, including the most mature of ecosystems like old oak forests. When chemical companies kill weeds for the expediency of creating commercial crops on a rapid timetable, they ultimately kill the very plants that could help them replenish the topsoil and the nutrients that are missing from our foods today. If we continue on this path, we will soon be eating flavored cardboard from our grocery store shelves. Don't forget to add the high fructose corn syrup.
Yay, flavored cardboard, my favorite.
Yeah, sweetened with high fructose corn syrup.
High fructose corn syrup. Cardboard.
Yep.
Yep. Yep, 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 yep.
Save the world. Plant a garden.
Yes, grow your own food. I'm looking for the other two videos. I dumped them in my video folder and haven't organized them yet. Here's another one, but it's not the one I'm looking for. I'll play it while I'm looking for it.
Okay.
Earth, where man and nature have lived for millions of years in harmony. A relationship of a mother and a child. After living like nomads for years, man realized the importance of a permanent shelter. His need for a home. Building materials evolved from stone to wood to bricks to cement.
Oh, I'm sorry, I said the wrong one.
Yeah, they didn't sound very good anyway.
No.
I could barely hear the words he was saying.
Oh, the music was too loud.
Yeah, the music was overdriving too. It wasn't. I couldn't really hear the music either because it's so loud.
Ba 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 ba. Poisonous plants.
No, there's no such thing as a poisonous plant, is there?
Yeah, grapes that have a single seed in them, a moon seed, is basically a poisonous grape.
Okay.
So, yeah, before you eat a grape, make sure you look at it to make sure it has more than one seed. If it only has one seed and it's in the shape of a moon, a crescent moon, or, you know, the half moon, then don't eat it. Supposedly. That's hearsay evidence.
Right.
Just like, what is it? Not elderberry, but the other berry that's supposed to be poisonous, but it's not really.
Comfrey?
That too. I got a lot of videos here. I lost them. Okay, I know how to find one of them. That's not it. Here's one of them.
Growing your own usually means moving to the country, plowing the fields, cultivating the crops, harvesting the bounty for your table. But these days, more people are turning to their own backyards to create urban farms. One Southern California family is at the forefront of that movement. Drivers moving past on the 210 freeway through Pasadena have no idea that a stone's throw away from the fast lane is a lush but tiny Eden, a 4,000-square-foot farm. It not only feeds a family, but revolutionizes the idea of what can be done in a very unlikely place, the middle of the street.
This is city living, but I brought the country to the city.
Uh-huh.
Rather than have to go out to the country, I just imported it.
63-year-old Jules Gervais started this backyard farm 10 years ago. It's a deliberate throwback to the storied days of self-reliant rural America. Jules and his children grow almost all the food they need, and everyone pitches in.
5 pounds of grapefruit.
His daughter, Anise.
We have another guy coming to pick up.
And Jordan.
Yeah, are you guys?
Okay.
And his son, Justin. Their produce is organic, and their animals are, well, friendlier than average.
Say hi. We have eight chickens, 4 ducks, and 2 goats. I joke with people, because I think my animals fit better in a city backyard than a lot of dogs in the neighborhood.
The ducks and chickens lay thousands of eggs a year and keep the bugs in check.
And they really made the dynamics of the urban homestead much more sustainable.
Sustainable and dense. On their 4,000 square feet, they raise 400 varieties of vegetables, fruits, and edible flowers. 6,000 pounds a year, enough to feed themselves with plenty left over. And with the current passion at high-end restaurants for local pesticide-free produce, chefs are literally beating a path to their door.
Hi, how are you?
Hello, good. How are you doing?
We have your order for today.
Oh, wonderful.
Sorrel here. So what are you going to do with the sorrel?
I'm going to use it to make a really nice relish with cucumber for our salmon dish.
The family makes about $20,000 a year from their front porch sales. They use it to buy the crops they can't grow, like wheat, rice, dope.
So I would say at the beginning, I didn't really believe I could do it. I had some doubts because I kept thinking, this place is too small. There's no way that we're going to be able to feed ourselves. Plus, I never thought we could even grow the vegetables for the market.
So how did this experiment in independent living begin? It all began 10 years ago when Jules bought some taco shells for dinner. He learned too late that the shells were being recalled because they had been made by mistake with genetically modified corn.
When I thought about putting this food in my children's mouth, and they were depending on me to give them good stuff, I mean, they'll take whatever their parent, any child will take what a parent hands them. They'll say, it comes from my mom or dad. And I couldn't afford to be in that position of giving them bad stuff.
Now, a decade later, this radical foodie has succeeded in going off the grid. He calls his lifestyle the path to freedom.
And what did family think of that whole approach?
They thought it was strange. They thought it was my daughter wouldn't come out of the front yard and visit with her friends because they said, what's up with your dad? They wanted to know what was going on because I was making some radical changes here.
The Gervais have no ugly commute. They avoid office politics and will never get fired. But their jobs are way more than 9 to 5.
I need to help all the help I can get. And it's my family that, like in the old days, the farmer's family made the difference.
Jordan takes care of the animals.
A joke for them, we call them pet organic composting machines.
Justin is in charge of making sure they get the most out of every square foot of soil. And sometimes the results are extraordinary.
You actually grew this?
Yeah, it's like a little pumpkin, but it's very long.
Just slightly.
Slightly.
He's also the beekeeper.
Oh, my gosh. That is the first time I've ever done straight from the honeycomb.
Mm. Jules prides himself on his gourmet compost. Oh,
yummy, yummy. Only worms could love them.
Good
rotten stuff.
Anisha's in charge of cooking the vegetarian meal.
All homegrown, strawberries and edible flowers and salad and beets and carrots.
And the canning.
We got grape leaves, pickles, beans, and pickled peppers, to all sorts of jams, tomato sauce.
And the menu? That depends on what's in season.
What happens when something's out of season?
We just don't eat it. You're out of luck. It's out of season.
There are no microwave ovens in this kitchen, and no Cuisinarts either.
We have gizmos, but they're just hand powered.
What little electricity they use is generated by these solar panels.
How much is your electricity bill?
Well, it's running about the highest $12 a month.
$12 a month for everything here.
Yeah.
They spend even less on gas. This is their biodiesel brewing station.
So this is just used grease from Russia.
Yeah, they use it to fry anything, french fries, anything you would fry.
And you get it free?
Yeah, free and delivered on our doorstep.
The gasoline station is self-serve. It hasn't always been easy. Justin remembers the year that frost wiped out a crop. Another year, it was a destructive insect. And recently, they've noticed a new challenge, climate change.
We call it the forefront of global weirdings because we've been gardening for so long, you can sense things are off. We have this June bug that comes out called June, so it's supposed to come out in June, but it comes out in July and August and September, so something's definitely off.
The other challenge is water. Southern California skies don't deliver enough of it. So Jules keeps the water bill down with this ancient form of irrigation.
It's a clay pot irrigation.
So it's buried under there.
It's buried usually up to the throat here.
Uh-huh.
And then all you do is fill it up, and the water weeps through the pore skin, through the clay. And you get the water where the plant's needed at the root zone. Plants take the water as needed. So simple.
It's 5 o'clock, dinner time, the time when it all pays off. The Gervais are the ultimate locavores. Their food travels a whole 100 feet from the field to the table. They all say they love urban homesteading and can't imagine living a typical consumer-driven life. But there's one thing they would like.
My plans are to have homestead built, which is...
What's homestead built?
A village of all homesteads. Start with my family will be there. They'll have their homesteads. Their extended family will be there, and people that want to live this lifestyle will be there.
At the end of the day, some not-so-back-to-nature activity. Visits to their websites have grown dramatically. They get about 6 million hits a month, from others interested in this grow-it-yourself revolution.
Growing food yourself is a dangerous act because you're in danger of becoming free. We're all in the same boat, on the same planet, and there are people now asking deep questions about the future of the planet, and they're willing to do this. They're willing to take a risk.
It's a risk that has paid off for Jules and is blazing a trail for others.
Yeah, you're in danger of becoming free.
No.
We can't have that.
Okay, I'm going to go burn our field.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm going to find my matches.
Growing your own usually means moving to the country, plowing the field, cultivating the crops, harvesting the bounty for your table. But these days, more people are turning to their own backyards to create urban farms.
In?
One Southern California family is at the forefront of that movement.
Hang on.
Drivers moving past on the 210 freeway through Pasadena.
This is in Pasadena, California.
Yep.
Right in the smack dab in basic L.A.
Yeah, Milton City.
And they've got 4,000 square feet garden.
Yep.
And they're producing almost all of the food that they need, plus making $20,000 a year on top of that.
Yep.
They don't have any utilities. Their utilities are $12 a month.
Now, is that because they're paying for a hookup, or is that because that's just the cost of their utilities?
Well, he said the maximum is $12 a month. So the service charges have to be less than $12 a month.
Right. So their service charges are lower than the service charges here by a lot.
Perhaps. Maybe they're feeding the grid, too.
I don't know.
Because the rules in California may be different than the rules here.
Yeah, true enough.
Have no idea that a stone's throw away from the fast lane is a lush but tiny Eden, a 4,000-square-foot farm. It not only feeds the family, but revolutionizes the idea of what can be done in a very unlikely place, the middle of the city.
This is city living, but I brought the country to the city.
Uh-huh.
Rather than have to go out to the country, I just imported it.
63-year-old.
So he said he imported the country to the city.
Right.
They got about 3-foot walkways, but they don't have any. Their walkways are pretty much concrete. They don't have any grass.
Right.
They got all of their flower beds are like 2x8s, 2x12s. And I'd say their flower beds or their garden beds are approximately the width of the walkway, and then probably about 6 foot long. So they have kind of small flower beds or garden beds, but they grow a lot of food in them. 4,000 square feet. How big is our garden area?
Our garden area is 50 by 50, roughly. So that's 2,500? Yeah.
So almost half of what theirs is. But then again, that's just, you know, a small plot that we're going to be doing for two people. They got four people doing theirs.
Right. And so when we double it to two of those plots, we'll have equal.
Right. And, of course, we're going to have some things growing in our
in the field
that we and in the field that we won't have to babysit, like pumpkins, watermelons. If we we will have to turn the watermelons into pumpkins. But corn, we won't have to babysit that. millet, milo, stuff like that. Sunflowers, we won't have to babysit those. We'll have to put nets over the sunflowers so that they drop the seeds into the nets or stockings. But other than that, so only some of our stuff we'll have to babysit. But most of it we want to get it to where it grows naturally so we don't have to babysit it. And, of course, they're
they're what?
I got a text from David Ray, so I had to stop and read it. They're doing something similar to a Huda culture. They're doing the clay pot thing.
Right.
But we're going to do a Huda culture instead.
Yeah, maybe you can have your computer voice read the world's most valuable cash crops.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Jules Gervais started this backyard farm 10 years ago.
They're showing pictures of his startup 10 years ago. He had just corn and a couple trees and some vines, probably grapevines.
It's a deliberate throwback to the storied days of self-reliant rural America. Jules and his children grow almost all the food they need, and everyone pitches in.
5 pounds of grapefruit.
His daughter, a niece.
We have another guy coming to pick up.
And Jordan.
Yeah. Are you done?
Okay. And his son, Justin.
Oh, those are his daughters. I guess his wife passed away or something. Because all the three people there are all his children.
In the article, didn't she say, and me?
And who?
She said, and me.
No, that's... She said the daughter's name, Anise or something like that.
Oh, Anise.
Yeah.
They're pretty great fruit. His daughter, Anise.
We have another.
Anise.
Anise, okay.
Yeah, at first I thought that was his wife because she looks older, but she looks young for being his wife. I thought she was his wife. But anyways.
Another guy coming to pick up.
And Jordan.
Yeah, are you done?
Okay. And his son, Justin. Their produce is organic. And their animals are, well, friendlier than average.
Yeah, the two goats are butting heads.
Sam? We have eight chickens, 4 ducks, and 2 goats.
She trained one of the goats to shake her hand.
I joke with people. I said, I think my animals fit better in a city backyard than a lot of dogs in the neighborhood.
The ducks and chickens lay thousands of eggs a year and keep the bugs in check.
And they really... made the dynamics of urban homestead much more sustainable.
Sustainable and dense. On their 4,000 square feet, they raise 400 varieties of vegetables, fruits, and edible flowers.
Edible flowers?
6,000 pounds a year, enough to feed themselves with plenty left over.
6,000 pounds a year in 4,000 square feet.
Yeah.
And with the current passion at high-end restaurants for local pesticide-free produce, chefs are literally beating a path to their door.
That's it, right there.
Hi, how
are you? So good. How are you doing?
We have your order today.
Oh, wonderful.
Are you still here?
So there's your clientele right there, the local restaurants, local grocery stores. You know, if they want organic, naturally homegrown foods that are poison-free,
right,
come to you. You don't have to worry about going to them. If they want it, they'll come to you.
There you go. They just need to know you exist.
Exactly. You may have to put the word out at first, but then once word gets around that you got the good stuff, word of mouth is the best advertising they say. So all you got to do is produce some good quality product. People will talk about you.
Yep.
But the other thing David was talking about was, you know, you get your local families, you know, to say, okay, I'm gonna spend $1,000 a year here instead of the grocery store, and you give them you give them grocery store prices for organic products. So you're giving them a better product, the same price that they're getting in the grocery store. You're competing with a competition that cannot meet your standards, and you're making retail prices without having to sell your food to the grocery store.
And if you do it right, they go and pick their own vegetables. But, yeah, and that's about a fifth of their food budget for the year, $1,000, if I remember right. I think the average American spends like $5,000 a year on their groceries. So you get $1,000 from them, that's a fifth, you know, and then they come and they pick what they want, and you tally it up and count it off as their credit.
There you go. So, yeah, $100 a month or less per household, you're going good. How many people are in Stockton?
We'd need to get more. We'd have to get the whole population of Stockton and then some to pull that off, I guess. I don't know. No, just 100 people. Just need to get 100 people. So there's, I was told there's about 9,000 people in Stockton, even though the sign says it's double that.
Okay.
So about a tenth of the population.
So, yeah, if you had a big enough garden and enough people working it, and you had everybody, just, of course, you're not going to get everybody. If you had everybody in our town shopping at your store or your yard, you can make almost $1 million a month. But, you know, if you're in a city and you're producing, you know, you got some decent yard, and you're producing some decent, food, you could potentially make more money than what this family is making out of their yard.
Yeah, it works to $83 a month equals $1,000 a year.
There you go. I calculated $75. So, but I mean, okay, we got 9,000 people. They say about 10% is what you can really count on. So we would have maybe 900 customers.
I'm sorry, I gave a bad number. The population sign says there's 1,800 people in Stockton. But talking to the survey, the guy who does the water meters and stuff, he estimates there's only 900 people in Stockton.
All right, so
I said it wrong.
Chances are we'll get about 90 customers from Stockton.
From Stockton itself. And then there's still people out in the country who might come in and like our stuff.
Right. So still, 90 times 100, that's $9,000 a month that we could potentially make.
Maybe, yeah.
Yeah.
And you're giving out good food in exchange for that.
We what?
And giving out good food in exchange for all that.
Exactly. If we give them the same prices that they're getting at the grocery store, and we're giving them organic, healthy products, they're going to get a better product for a better price, or for the same price. And actually, we can make more money because Woods charges more than most grocery stores charge because we're out here in a boonie.
Well, yeah, we might make more money because we might get more than 10% because they'll come out to get our vegetables.
Right.
Because they'll be cheaper.
Exactly. So,
all right,
yeah.
Well, we are no longer approaching the two-hour mark. We're about 7 minutes past that.
All right.
So what are you going to do with the sorrel? I'm going to use it to make a really nice relish with cucumber sorrel sandwich.
The family makes about $20,000 a year from their front porch sales. They use it to buy the crops they can't grow, like wheat, rice, and oats.
That's just their front porch sales. That's not sales that they might sell on the internet.
Right.
Because they do have a Facebook page, and they do probably sell things on the internet, too.
Maybe, don't know.
I didn't really believe I could do it.
Pardon?
I said maybe, I don't know.
Yeah, we don't know.
I had some doubts because I kept thinking this place is too small. There's no way that we're going to be able to feed ourselves. Plus, I never thought we could even grow the vegetables for the market.
So how did this experiment in independent living begin? It all began 10 years ago when Jules bought some taco shells for dinner. He learned too late that the shells were being recalled because they had been made by mistake with genetically modified corn.
No way! Yeah. He was feeding his kids GMO taco shells, and he was like, no, we can't have that.
Yep.
Not only that, but they were being recalled because they were made from GMO.
GMO! GMO!
Right.
When I saw my children's mouth, and they were depending on me to give them good stuff. I mean, they'll take whatever the parent, any child will take what a parent hands them. They'll say, it comes from my mom or dad. And I couldn't afford to be in that position of giving them bad stuff.
Now, a decade later, this radical foodie has succeeded in going off the grid. He calls his lifestyle the path to freedom. And what did family think of that whole approach?
They thought it was strange. They thought it was my daughter wouldn't come out of the front yard and visit with her friends because they said, what's up with your dad? They wanted to know what was going on because I was making some radical changes here.
The Gervais have no ugly commute. They avoid office politics and will never get fired. But their jobs are way more than 9 to 5.
I need to help, all the help I can get. And it's my family that, like in the old days, the farmer's family made the difference.
Jordan takes care of the animals.
A joke for them, we call them pet organic composting machines.
Pet organic composting machine.
Say that again?
They call their animals pet organic composting machines.
Pockums. I don't know.
He's in charge of making sure they get the most out of every square foot of soil. And sometimes the results are extraordinary. You actually grew this?
Yeah, it's like a little pumpkin, but it's very long.
Yeah, this pumpkin, I don't know how he did it, but the pumpkin is almost as tall as he is. It's a real long, skinny pumpkin.
Right.
It's funny. Well, maybe it's about as tall as she is, because she's a little shorter than him. But it is long. It looks more like a giant squash than it does a pumpkin.
He's also the beekeeper. Oh, my gosh. That's the first time I've ever done straight from the honeycomb. Whoa.
Jules prides himself on his gourmet compost.
Yummy, yummy. Only worms could love them.
Anisha's in charge of cooking the vegetarian meals.
All homegrown, strawberries and edible flowers and salad and beets and carrots.
And the canning.
We got grape leaves, pickled beans, and pickled peppers, to all sorts of jams, tomato sauce.
And the menu? That depends on what's in season.
What happens when something's out of season?
We just don't eat it. You're out of luck. It's out of season.
There are no microwave ovens in this kitchen, and no Cuisinarts either.
We have gizmos, but this is hand-powered.
What little electricity they use is generated by these solar panels.
How much is the electricity bill?
Well, it's running about as high as $12 a month.
$12 a month for everything here.
Yeah.
They spend even less on gas. This is their biodiesel brewing station.
So this is just used grease from restaurants.
Yeah, they use it to fry everything, stir fry, anything you would fry.
And you get it free?
Yeah, free and delivered to my doorstep. So the restaurants that are buying their groceries from them,
right,
bring the old grease and fat to them, and they recycle that, and they turn it into fuel for their cars.
There you go.
The gasoline station is self-serve. It hasn't always been easy. Justin remembers the year that frost wiped out a crop. Another year, it was a destructive insect. And recently, they've noticed a new challenge, climate change.
He says they call it global weirding.
Yeah.
Because the June bug's not coming out in June anymore. Or July. It comes out usually around July nowadays.
We call it the forefront of global weirding because we've been gardening for so long, you can sense things are off. We have this June bug that comes out called June, so it's supposed to come out in June, but it comes out in July and August, and, you know, September, so something's definitely off.
The other challenge is water. Southern California skies don't deliver enough of it, so Jules keeps the water bill down with this ancient form of irrigation.
It's a clay pot irrigation.
So it's buried under there.
It's buried, usually up to the throat here, uh-huh. And then all you do is fill it up, and the water weeps through the pores, through the clay. And you get the water where the plant's needed at the root zone. Plants take the water as needed. So it's simple.
It's 5 o'clock, dinner time, the time when it all pays off.
It's going to be inside us.
The Gervais are the ultimate locavores. Their food traveled a whole 100 feet from the field to the table.
That's what we are, locavores.
Locavores.
They all say they love urban homesteading and can't imagine living a typical consumer-driven life. But there's one thing they would like.
My plans are to have Homesteadville, which is...
What's Homesteadville?
A village of all homesteads to start with. My family would be there. They'll have their homesteads. Their extended family would be there. And people that want to live this lifestyle will be there.
At the end of the day, some not-so-back-to-nature activity. Visits to their websites have grown dramatically. They get about 6 million hits a month from others interested in this grow-it-yourself revolution.
Growing food yourself is a dangerous act because you're in danger of becoming free. We're all in the same boat on the same planet, and there are people now asking deep questions about the future of the planet, and they're willing to do this. They're willing to take a risk.
It's a risk that has paid off for Jules and is blazing a trail for others.
Yeah, we're at risk of being free.
No!
Right. I can't find the third video. I don't know what I did with it.
Yes.
We're already at 2 hours. But yeah, grow your own food. I mean... We tried to do that with our families.
over, well, about, what, 5-10 years ago?
Yeah, a little bit closer for me, but yeah.
About 5 years ago?
Well, I came out here going on 7.
Okay.
So, yeah, about 10 years ago. You know, a little bit less.
Okay, so for you it was about 10 years ago. For me it was about 5 years ago. It was 07 when I bought my house, and it was probably 09 whenever I started, or we started, growing food in our backyard. But yeah, we were doing that also in the city, or at least trying. But our family wasn't on board as much as this guy's was.
Yes, yeah.
So now we're in the country. Where country's cool. And we're looking for new wives who are on board with what we're doing. But, yeah. So anyways, yeah, you should be growing food, not yards. I mean, okay, maybe have your front yard look normal if you want. You know, that's what we did. We had, we were growing flowers in the front yard for decoration, but some of them were edible flowers as well, herbs, whatnot. So the front yard was more like, you know, flower, grass, you know, whatever, flowers and grass. And then the backyard, we were turning into our own little farm. Yeah, it just didn't work out. So now we're out in the country doing it, David and I.
I had a teeny front yard, and I turned it into a bamboo forest.
Bamboo forest!
It was beautiful. Even I could climb the bamboo.
Cool.
At 250 pounds.
That's crazy.
Yeah, well, yeah. It took about 5-6 years to get it that thick, but I eventually got it thick enough that I could climb it.
Well, that's the other thing that will help us clean up the Roundup is bamboo.
Right, but let's get timber bamboo so we can get some function out of it.
Right, because we're not going to eat that. We're going to use it for timber.
Right.
There you go.
There we go. We can make a soldiered house using timber bamboo.
That'll work.
With aircrete to fill the gaps.
That'll work too.
All right.
So where are we at now? 2 hours and what?
2 hours and 19 minutes, approaching 20.
All right, we got time for one more. This is an interesting video.
It's up to you to see the download. Yeah, it's a nice video. I can't see a thing.
Okay, audio.
You've been living without money for 12 years, right?
Yeah, 12 years, 2000, the fall of 2000.
So, why did you choose that?
That's always a little difficult of a question because there's a lot of different reasons.
Can you hear the talking over the music?
Something I actually thought about.
Not really.
I was raised in a church.
Okay, never mind. You have to look up on YouTube, The Man Who Quit Money.
The Man Who Quit Money.
The Man Who Quit Money.
All right. Do you have any way of feeding that one article I sent you through a text reader?
You sent it to me on my...
On your phone, of course. I'm sorry. You want to send that to your email?
I'm forwarding it to my email now.
Okay. It's more of a political statement than it is advice on how to make money farming, but I thought it was a little interesting. Did tell me, though, that I might want to start growing a crop of tomatoes.
A crop of tomatoes?
Yeah, that's probably one of the most profitable legal crops that you can grow per acre.
I've not been very good at growing tomatoes.
Well, probably why it's so profitable then. Anyway. All right, you got it yet?
Working on it.
Okay. I wonder if mine will read it.
Here we go.
Very good.
The world's most valuable cash crops. May 6th. 4 votes. The war on drugs has been ongoing for over half of a century. That war laid the foundation for the modern police state and the continuing growth of American despotism. The following graphic is not only testimony to the war on drugs' failure, but also to its deceit. The top people responsible for waging that war don't really want that war to be won. If they did, how could the following graphic be true? Courtesy of Visual Capitalist. In all the world, the three cash crops that produce the most revenue per square kilometer of cultivated soil are cannabis, marijuana, cocoa, cocaine, and opium poppy, opium. People who grow marijuana, for example, can expect to generate profits per square foot of cultivated soil that are 850 times greater than those of people who grow wheat. Why are plants that produce drugs so lucrative? Because they're illegal. If government declared corn to be illegal, it would soon be every bit as lucrative as opium. It is the government's prohibition on these crops that make them so incredibly profitable. It is the incredible profits associated with these drugs that guarantee their cultivation will continue to increase so long as that cultivation remains illegal. I see 5 implications in this. Our primary addiction is not to pot, coke or opium, it is to currency. The plants that produce the most profits are the most addictive. If government really wanted to win the war on drugs, it should legalize the cultivation of pot, coke, and opium. Once legal, the profit potential in those drugs would collapse, and while use of those drugs would never completely disappear, that use would be dramatically reduced. Most drug users are addicted more to the profits associated with the drug than they are to the drugs themselves. If McGuff the crime dog really wanted to take a bite out of crime, he should start by taking a bite out of the profits in illegal drugs. Given that the drug's profitability is primarily due to their illegality, the legalization of drugs should be the single most effective step in reducing the use of currently illegal drugs. If it is true that criminalizing the cultivation of some crop makes them incredibly profitable, does it follow that subsidizing the cultivation of other plants, corn and wheat, for example, makes them incredibly unprofitable? So long as government supposedly helps farmers by subsidizing their crops, does government guarantee that those crops will be only marginally profitable and the farmers are more susceptible to bankruptcy? Does the same principle apply to poor people on welfare? Could it be that the more financial assistance the unemployed receive from government, the less likely they are to ever again become employed, profitable and prosperous? If it is true that criminalizing the use of some drugs makes them incredibly profitable, it should follow that regulating the use and availability of other drugs by means of FDA regulations and medical prescriptions should also generate unreasonably high profits for doctors, hospitals and, especially, major pharmaceutical manufacturers. Does criminalization necessarily lead to more regulation, bigger government, and more profits for special interests? It might be argued that the criminalization of drug-producing plants, marijuana, cocaine, and opium, was a vital prerequisite for regulating all drugs and thereby guaranteeing fantastic profits for pharmaceutical manufacturers. I.e., once government criminalized the use and/or distribution for some drugs, it seemed logical and relatively easy for government to regulate the use of virtually all other drugs and, coincidentally, guarantee fantastic profits for Big Pharma.
All right, might cut it off there.
Yeah, Big Pharma, big pharmaceutical company.
Well, yeah, this graphic that they described, it at the top it has a chart that shows what is the most planted, and it, you know, wheat and maize and corn, soybeans, beans, barley, in that order, okay? Way down at the bottom is cannabis, opium, coca, all right? Now, the next one says the most fecund, a word that means productive. All right, you know, when it comes to plants, the plants that grow the most, all right? And that one shows that sugarcane actually grows the most, followed by sugar beets and tomatoes, okay? And then the fourth one shows the most popular, okay? And actually, sugarcane is, again, the most popular, followed by the three grains that were the first most popular, the most planted. And then it shows revenue. The most revenue comes from, of course, cannabis. So, and then that's followed by the three grains at the top. So, but cannabis is almost double the most productive grain. Then down below that they have all these little circles, and the three biggest circles is basically how much profit you get per, they said square kilometer, but basically that translates into the most profit per acre. All right, the most profitable product per acre is cannabis, followed by the next illegal drug, coca, and then after that is opium. And, you know, what I was telling Kano is the most profitable legal plant on that chart is tomatoes, followed by grapes.
Yep.
So yeah, we might consider doing tomatoes or grapes or both, because we don't want them burning our fields for doing cannabis.
No.
But it was interesting.
Because the government hates competition.
Yeah. Anyways, it's interesting the conclusions he came to, and I don't see any flaws in it this time, but you know, basically, people aren't addicted to the marijuana or the cocaine. They're addicted to the money.
Right.
They're addicted to the profit.
Or the stigma.
Whatever, but that's what they're addicted to. Well, you know, it's the one that gets shoved at them. You know, it's like, hey, you know, I'm making lots of profit on this, so buy more of it. You know?
Well, yeah. Yeah, I mean, okay. The three most popular grains make more money than the other two drugs. So,
yeah,
wheat, maize, and rice. Rice looks like it is really the,
yeah,
according to first chart, rice looks like it's the best yielding
crop.
Well,
yeah, it's the one that they make billions of dollars on. They make over $200 billion in rice.
But not per square foot.
No, not per square foot. That's based on about 1.5 million square kilometers of it planted.
Right.
Okay. Whereas the cannabis, you can just barely see the line of how many square kilometers were planted of it. And you can't see the line at all for opium and coca. So.
Right.
But that very small sliver produced $300 billion in revenue.
Yep.
So. You know, so like lots of land taken up for rice, next to no land at all for cannabis, and yet cannabis sold a lot more product, you know, a lot more, made a lot more dollars coming in. All right. So it's, you know, per acre, the cannabis is definitely the forerunner.
Okay. Pack your bags. We're going to Colorado.
Well, but you read what he said, that if you want to fight the war on drugs, legalize it. And then the profit goes out.
Well, yeah, but see, it's not legal. It's regulated, just like the pharmaceutical industry. Therefore, that's how they're keeping the price inflated.
Yeah, that's the other thing he came to the conclusion on and pointed out, which, you know, is a good point. If it's not illegal, at least regulate it. And if it's regulated, it's still going to be fantastically profitable.
Right. Like organics.
Yeah, when they make organics illegal, we'll make a lot of money.
Well, no, I mean, okay, they got all these rules, regulations, standards, and guidelines for certified organic that they don't actually enforce. You just have to be in the pockets of the government in order for them to give you that thing. So, to be certified organic, you can jack your price up really high and make lots of money. But you're not really certified organic. You're just certified by the by
you're
the mafia.
Certified USDA organic.
Certified mafia organic.
So we should feed the beast so we can make more profit.
Right.
But my profit is in making my neighbors healthy and at least providing them with the opportunity of being healthy and getting good food.
That's
so
it.
I'm sorry, but that dollar profit really doesn't interest me so much. It'd be nice, but it's not what I'm after.
Correct. So that's from the website of Adask.
Yeah, Adask Law. Yeah, he does a podcast I've been trying to get you to listen to, actually, where he, well, his history is this. He was a man who rented some chairs to a seminar where they were praising the good of colloidal silver. And USDA Food and Drug, well, not USDA, U.S. Food and Drug Administration came down on that conference and sued them for saying, hey, you're saying you can cure stuff with this colloidal silver. And they looked around, and there wasn't anybody they could make any money off of there except for the guy who owned the chairs and rented them to the conference. So they sued him. And that was him. And, you know, he found out very quickly, lawyers don't do you any good. you know. They wanted to fine him something like $50,000 a day. I don't remember the exact amount, but it was a huge amount. And it was quickly adding up to millions, you know. I think they wanted millions a month out of him, basically. All right? And he didn't have it. I mean, all he had was this chair rental service, whatever, right? He made the mistake of renting some chairs to a bunch of fanatics who did colloidal silver. It's like, you know, you don't have to agree with somebody in order to rent them chairs. But nonetheless, they went after him, okay? Because he was the only one in the group that had money.
So it's not even safe to rent people chairs anymore.
No, no, you got to know what their philosophy is before you do that because, you know, you're Muslim? I don't dare rent you any chairs because, you know, they might accuse me of helping Al-Qaeda.
Right, they might accuse me of being a terrorist even though they're the terrorists.
Anyway, he went into court and defended himself, and ultimately his biggest defense was, I'm not an animal. And all your laws are aimed at man and other animals.
Right.
I'm not an animal. You know? So... And they eventually backed off and left him alone. But they did go after him. You know. And so now he has a radio program. And he discusses issues of law. And, you know, it's mostly political theory and stuff like that. But, you know, I guess he drives around without a license plate and driver's license and stuff like that. And he has this 20, 30-page piece of documentation that he calls a cheat sheet. And whenever he gets pulled over, he hands that over to the cop, and the cop thumbs through it and talks to his supervisor and sends him on his way.
Cool.
So, yeah, yeah. But that's his story. I don't know that it's true. That's just his story. So
that's his story, and he's sticking to it.
Pretty much, pretty much. And if you corner him, he'll probably say exactly that. That's my story, and I'm sticking to it. He'd probably use those exact words.
Right.
So anyway, yeah, he's a good one to listen to.
All right, I put him on our website, daviddavidanddavid.com, under the links page.
Right. Yep, I like the way he begins all of his programs and such. But he had this article. I was looking at, actually I'm downloading a video right now, Man and Other Animals. It may have come in already. Yep, looks like it finished.
Okay, yeah, you've had me listen to his podcast before.
Okay. Yep. He's also the one I want you to ask, call and ask about the about that survey that they want you to fill out, declaring all of your property so that they can tax it.
Right.
Like, you know, as if you're obligated to even fill it out.
Right.
He's like, how can you be obligated to violate your own privacy?
Don't know.
Oh, I got it. I know how it is you're obligated to violate your own privacy. They got a gun to your head.
Pretty much.
And, you know, your obligation to preserve your life is that you forfeit your privacy so that your life is preserved.
Right. Yep, because if you don't do what they say, they'll tack extra fines on you, drag your butt into court, take everything you own, and if that doesn't work, they'll throw you in jail and or kill you.
Yep, and if you refuse to go to jail or refuse to comply at all, yeah, ultimately they will kill you.
Yep.
You didn't pay for the roads. You got to die.
Right, which brings us to the, we got to do Ron Paul.
All right, do Ron Paul, and we'll say goodnight.
Ron
Just 1 week in office, President Trump is already following through on his pledge to address illegal immigration. His January 25th executive order called for the construction of a wall along the entire length of the U.S.-Mexico border. While he is right to focus on the issue, there are several reasons why his proposed solution will unfortunately not lead us anywhere closer to solving the problem. First, the wall will not work. Texas already started building a border fence about 10 years ago. It divided people from their own property across the border. It deprived people of their land through the use of eminent domain, and in the end, the problem of drug and human smuggling was not solved. Second, the wall will be expensive. The wall is estimated to cost between $12 and $15 billion. You can bet it will be more than that. President Trump has claimed that if the Mexican government doesn't pay for it, he will impose a 20% duty on products imported from Mexico. Who will pay this tax? Ultimately, the American consumer, as the additional costs will be passed on. This will, of course, hurt the poorest Americans the most. Third, building a wall ignores the real causes of illegal border crossings into the United States. Though President Trump is right to prioritize the problem of border security, he misses the point on how it can be done effectively and at an actual financial benefit to the country rather than a huge economic drain. The solution to really addressing the problem of illegal immigration, drug smuggling, and the threat of cross-border terrorism is clear. Remove the welfare magnet that attracts so many to cross the border illegally. Stop the 25-year U.S. war in the Middle East and end the drug war that incentivizes smugglers to cross the border. The various taxpayer-funded programs that benefit illegal immigrants in the United States, such as direct financial transfers, medical benefits, food assistance, and education, cost an estimated $100 billion per year. That is a significant burden on the citizens and legal residents. The promise of free money, free food, free education, and free medical care if you cross the border illegally is a powerful incentive for people to do so. It especially makes no sense for the United States government to provide these services to those who are not in the U.S. legally. Likewise, the 40-year war on drugs has produced no benefits to the American people at a great cost. It is estimated that since President Nixon's declared a war on drugs, the U.S. has spent more than $1 trillion to fight what is a losing battle. That is because just as with the welfare magnet, there is an enormous incentive to smuggle drugs into the United States. We already know the effect that ending the war on drugs has on illegal smuggling. As more and more U.S. states decriminalize marijuana for the medical and the recreational uses, marijuana smuggling from Mexico to the U.S. has dropped by 50% from 2010. Finally, the threat of terrorists crossing into the United States from Mexico must be taken seriously. However, once again, we must soberly consider why they may seek to do us harm. We have been dropping bombs in the Middle East since at least 1990, last year. President Obama dropped more than 26,000 bombs. Thousands of civilians have been killed in U.S. drone attacks. The grand U.S. plan to remake the Middle East has produced only misery, bloodshed, and terrorism. Ending this senseless intervention will go a long way toward removing the incentive to attack the United States.
To repeat the announcement, press 1.
That was a mouthful.
To repeat the announcement, press 1.
Wait for it.
To repeat the announcement, press 1.
So, he talked about something we already talked about, and that was the war on drugs.
War on drugs.
Yeah, only makes it worse, not better.
Yeah, and he got cut off before he could finish his message.
I know. Yeah.
He didn't even get anywhere close to the phone number. Get the people.
Oh, yeah, or his advertisement. Yeah. So Ron Paul's phone number, if you want to call it and listen, is 888-322-1414. Once again, that's 888-322-1414. New updates are posted every Sunday.
Yeah, it's posted for Monday, but it's every Sunday. And if you call that number, you might just get the rest of his message.
Nah.
But he's got the text for it somewhere on his website, so.
I don't know. Oh, yeah. I know where it used to be, but I don't know where it is now. Because he used to be a congressman for Texas, and he had it on his congressman website, but now he's not a congressman, so I don't know where it is now.
No, what happened?
Well, he basically left Congress, ran for presidency. He didn't make president, and so he started his own business or something or other. He retired from Congress, and even though he was pretty much the last good guy in Congress, there was probably one or two others. But anyways, he started his Campaign for Liberty, nonprofit or not-for-profit organization where, he's basically doing the same thing he was trying to do in Congress, but nobody would listen to him. So now he's doing it by running his own business.
Right.
Building a wall isn't going to work. You know, we need to stop increasing the size, the cost, extending and reaching the power of government. Stop creating a problem so you can create a solution for the problem. They're giving incentives to all these illegals to come over here. Well, quit giving them the incentives, and they won't come over here. We won't need a wall.
Right. Yep. But, you know, as was pointed out with the drug thing, make it illegal and it becomes more profitable.
Well, you know, and like I said, they create a problem so they can create a solution for the problem. You know, it's like, okay, we're going to give all these illegals all of these incentives. Oh, now we got a problem with the illegals. Oh, we got to do something about it. We need to build a wall. We got to throw some money at this. Okay, Trump wants to build a wall. Who is Trump going to hire to build the wall? He's going to hire his contractors.
Hire a bunch of illegals.
Probably hire a bunch of illegals, but he's going to hire his contractors so he can put our money in his pocket.
No. He wouldn't do that.
Exactly. You create a problem so you can advocate a solution for the problem, which puts more and more money into your pocket. But our friend was talking about how Trump was doing such an amazing job, and he's probably going to get himself assassinated because he's doing such a damn good job.
Which will create a civil war, which is probably their true objective in the first place.
Right, and they probably really won't assassinate him. They'll put him in some witness protection program because, and change his identity.
give him plastic surgery, make him look younger. So
they look like already lined up.
Huh?
They probably got some look like already lined up.
Right. He'll just retire and live the good life with his new identity.
Right.
But I don't see Donald Trump retiring. He'll probably just be the next billionaire or millionaire, whatever, with this new identity, and he'll be somebody else instead of who you think he is.
Ridiculous.
Who you think he is, yeah. Who knows? I have no idea. I didn't even think Trump would win. I figured the New World Order wanted Hillary, so I figured she was going to win.
Well, they announced that she won about 2 weeks before, accidentally.
Accidentally.
And 4 years ago, they accidentally, on purpose, announced the exact election of results. So I kind of figured, okay, it was another one of those. But, you know, they announced the election results 4 years ago, and it was dead on to what really happened, or, you know, what they tell us really happened.
Right. So, yeah, we just figured past predicts future. Boom. But they threw a monkey in the wrench to make it look like they weren't playing the system, probably.
Probably. So, yeah. So this time's slip up.
Probably wasn't really a slip up.
Yeah.
Anyways, I'm tired. All right, well, this concludes Demented Dungeons and Dragons podcast.
Yeah.
You can find the information. You can find everything at DementedDungeonsAndDragons.com. Or, hang on a second, Demented Dungeons and Dragons.
You hear those coyotes?
Uh-uh. But I hope the coyote dogs are doing their jobs.
I hear them.
All right. The phone number to call in Sunday at 7 p.m. Central Standard Time or 8 p.m. Central Daylight Time is 563-999-2010. Once again, that's 563-999-2010. And the access code is 256-012. Again, that's 256-012. And we are almost to 3 hours. So we are going to conclude this podcast so that we can upload it. Maybe tonight. I might have to wait till I get a good signal. So you can listen to it.
Right. Well, they could listen to the original place if we ever told them where that was.
Oh, that's at... freeconferencing.com. But you won't know that until after you listen to this.
No, but they might. They might next week.
Yeah, you got to punch in some weird codes and stuff like that. But the information is at DementedDungeonsAndDragons.com. You
very
click on the name of the podcast, and it'll give you all the details. My internet's so slow that I can't even open that page. So.
Ouch.
Owie. But we got 4 likes. I thought we had 5 likes. We got 4 likes on our last podcast. And 2 shares, 2 Google shares.
Woo.
Yeah, so two people shared us. And I don't know about tweets. It doesn't tell us how many tweets we got, so.
What's a tweet?
So like us, tweet us, and share us if you like us. And I'll be working on a Facebook like page, so you can like us there as well if you like us, and we can keep track of how many people actually like us and maybe get some sponsors.
Yay.
And if we get sponsors, we can take this podcast to the next level.
Really?
Whatever.
All right.
We can maybe take it to the next level. I mean, well, you know, I pay about $100 a year to keep the podcast going. So if we can get some support for that, then we can at least, you know, maybe start paying. Then I can probably start paying to call into the podcast. Or maybe even get a different phone company that will let me call the podcast for free, which will be pretty much the same as paying to call into the podcast. So, check out daviddavidanddavid.com. That's our off-grid organic farm and retreat website. And check out DementedDungeonsAndDragons.com if you're not already there listening to this podcast.
Yay.
Also check out CES, Community Exchange System. Get away from Federal Reserve Notes. Go to the gold standard or some other standard that is not fiat. Anything but fiat.
Yeah, but most people don't even know what that is.
Google it. Anyways, we'll talk about that later on another podcast, or you can listen to it on our older podcast where we have already talked about that.
All right.
All right.
Good night.
Good night.
Sleep tight. And we are approaching 3 hours in about 87 seconds here. All right. Night.
Goodbye. Good night.